Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey everyone, Mike Lanana here. Welcome back to another Baseball America College Podcast, sponsored by Louisville Slugger, Power in Numbers. It was a crazy, fun week in college baseball. This past weekend was super fun. I personally was in South Carolina for Clemson and South Carolina, the Reedy River Rivalry Series, which is a tongue twister to say. And Teddy Cahill was in Houston for the Shriners Hospital College Classic and saw a lot of talent there. Teddy, how was the tournament? How was the experience out there?
It was fantastic. I mean, the tournament field going into the weekend had five ranked teams. And coming out of the weekend, now all six teams that were in Houston are in the rankings. And, like, I mean, it was incredibly talented, and it was an incredibly entertaining tournament as well. We had the three of the last four games ended in walk-offs. There was, a 15-inning marathon between TCU and A&M, the super regional rivalry rematch there. We got to see Jared Poche, who had no-hit drama this weekend, but still hasn't allowed a run this season. And then the whole thing ended when Baylor walked off A&M on a grand slam from their nine-hole hitter, Tucker Cascaden, off of preseason All-American Corbin Martin. And that ball was just absolutely rocketed out of Minute Maid Park, and if it hadn't hit the back wall of the stadium, it would have gone a long, long way. He really got into that one. So it was a fantastic weekend. And the tournament field, when you looked at it going in, promised to be a very exciting showcase for college baseball. And that's exactly what we got here in Houston this weekend.
Right, right. And it was exciting to follow you from afar just to see everything that was going on. And, I can only imagine you didn't get much sleep this weekend in Houston, but, looking at that field, like you said, I mean, it is kind of, you can envision multiple teams in that field in Omaha later in the year. And, the impact that this past weekend had on the top 25, our top 25 is up on the website now. Check it out. We'll dive into that a little bit later on. But did you get the sense, did you learn a little bit more about some of these teams while you were out there?
Yeah, I think the teams definitely learned more about themselves. And, we don't want to read too much into one weekend. The coaches don't want to read too much into one weekend, the first weekend of March, especially. But, when you play this kind of competition early in the season, it does reveal a lot of things. For pretty much every one of these teams, this was, the toughest test to date. And, it'll be the toughest test for most of them for a few weeks still. Once conference play starts, they'll get into some tougher series, but the level of competition here, multiple people talked about it having, Omaha atmosphere. And, when you play those kinds of games, it can only help you, and it can only teach you about your team. And, so I think we did learn more. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to read too much into anything. Last year, TCU went 3-0 here in this tournament and vaulted that, rode that momentum for a lot of the season. Jim Schlossnagel told me that, they were able to look back on that later in the year and take some confidence from it. But at the same time, Arkansas went 2-1 here, last year and looked great doing it. But then obviously they kind of fell apart once SEC play started and they wind up missing the SEC tournament, finishing under 500, just a very disappointing season for the Razorbacks. So there's a lot of baseball left to be played, as, everyone, all the coaches and players were talking about throughout the weekend. They don't want to get too caught up in it, but at the same time, I think a lot of teams, especially A&M and TCU, because they played 15 innings on Saturday, they learned a lot about their young pitchers and their young players overall in big environments in front of big crowds all weekend.
Right, right. And you touched on this a little bit earlier, but, obviously, Baylor coming into this tournament, it's probably the team that, wasn't ranked coming in, a team maybe with, you know, not as much hype as quite, you know, the other teams in this field, but, you know, they're undefeated coming in. They had a nice showing. They're in our top 25 this week. They slide in at number 24. What did you see out of Baylor this weekend?
Yeah, that was, it was a really big weekend for Baylor. They were undefeated. They were coming off a serious sweep of South Alabama at home, and South Al we had in preseason as a regional team. You know, they were a regional team last year. That's a good program, but, you know, this was a much bigger test for the Bears, who haven't had a winning record or been to the NCAA tournament since 2012, which is also the last time that, they were in the top 25. To go and play the level of competition they played was important for them, and to play in this atmosphere was important for them, because unlike these other teams, they don't have tournament experience. They don't have that postseason experience. So, to play in front of the crowd and pressurize games, I think was very important for that team. And they really passed the test. They went out on Friday and pitched Ole Miss 4-0. They pitched really well on that game. Mm-hmm. And then Jared Poche got them the next day, as I think will happen to a lot of teams this season. And then, you know, on Sunday, they trailed the whole game. They were down 3-1 going into the ninth. But this team really has a strong belief in themselves. And that really showed, in that ninth inning. They just got things going a little bit, and it kind of snowballed. And before you know it, they had the bases loaded with one out against Corbin Martin, and Martin got a strike up. To bring up Cascaden, and, they still managed to find a way to win. And Cascaden really unloaded on that pitch and set off this raucous celebration there for the Bears. And they finished the weekend at 2-1. I think that the way they play, with so much belief, it's only going to, that's going to be big for them this year, because, you know, they're not the most talented team mm-hmm. in the field. They're not the most talented team in the country or anything like that. But, there are a lot of guys that know how to play the game and really have bought into the way that Steve Rodriguez is wants them to play. This is his second year coaching them. I think that they're clearly taking a step forward, and they should really be able to sustain it. I think what's happening is sustainable to some level. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a tough go for them. Obviously, the Big 12 looks very strong again this year. They have Houston this weekend, which is not an easy series. They play Washington later in the year. Obviously, that's a tough one as well. There are going to be some bumps in the road, and we'll see how they handle that kind of adversity. They haven't seen it yet, but overall, this is a team that it should be able to have some staying power.
Right, right. Yeah, and like I mentioned, Baylor comes in at number 24 this week. Texas A&M stays at number 25. One of the bigger jumps this week was Texas Tech, jumping up to number 14. TCU holds on to the number one spot. And LSU drops a couple of spots. They did lose two games in that classic, but obviously the game against TCU, I mean, that seemed like a wild one, and, you know, probably a preview of what we might see in Omaha, you know, in a few months from now.
Yeah, that was definitely a crazy one there on Friday night. I mean, it was Alex Lane on the mound for LSU, and he just didn't quite have his command of his fastball, and TCU did a really, really good job of laying off the curveball, which is kind of the book on Alex Lane. You have to lay off the curveball because it's often thrown in the dirt, and it's a really tough, it's one of the best pitches in the country, so it's not easy to do that, but TCU was able to do that. And Lane wasn't able to throw enough strikes with his fastball to get them back swinging at his curveball. They knocked him out of the game there, pretty early on, and, TCU's offense was kept going. It's really rolling. And, Brian Howard, LSU got to him a little bit in the first inning, but he really settled into the game eventually. And, they were able to, go out and finish the job there, which was, it was a big matchup, top five matchup there on Friday night, and it was big for TCU to come out and, be able to beat one of the best pitchers in the country.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's, like I said, I mean, we dinged the LSU a little bit in the rankings, dropped them to number six, but obviously, nothing to be ashamed of given the competition that they face this weekend. And you look at the rest of the top 10, a few other changes as well. One thing that might be notable is Clemson has leapfrogged South Carolina in the top 10. Clemson comes in at number 9 this week, having been number 15 the past week, while South Carolina drops to number 10. They were the preseason number 5. They've been number 5 all year. Slipped a little bit this weekend. And, you know, I'll tell you what, I covered this rivalry series last year as well, the last 2 years. It's probably the most fun series that I go to throughout the year, throughout the regular season. It's the fans are into it. The setup of, you know, playing one game at Clemson, one game at Fluor Field in Greenville, and one game in Columbia is really unique and a really cool thing that they do. And it's just fun. I mean, the games themselves were just incredible to watch, you know, just taking them in from a fan perspective, and obviously, you know, covering them as well and seeing the talent on the field. The Friday night game, it came down to really, I mean, it's a game that Clemson probably should have won, just because Charlie Barnes was really cruising on the mound, and it just came down to an error in right field by KJ Bryant. Two runs came around to score, and, you know, Clemson just, you know, they pressured Clark Schmidt. It was probably Clark Schmidt's worst start of the year, but he still didn't give up a single run because he kept getting double plays. He kept, you know, he shifted to his two-seamer and got a lot of grounders, and, you know, despite walking 7 guys, he's able to strand a lot of Tigers on the base paths. But, you know, you have to give Clemson credit. They came back and battled the next 2 days. You know, South Carolina easily could have swept this series. They had leads in both Saturday's game and Sunday's game. Saturday, Will Crow looked very good. They were up 5-2 heading into the 7th inning, and, you know, the bullpen just kind of fell apart for the Gamecocks there, and Clemson came back and won 8-7. And then yesterday's game, if you haven't seen the Vine yet, that's been retweeted by I think everyone on Twitter at this point, Seth Beer with 2 outs, 3-2 count in the 9th inning. Josh Reagan hangs a breaking ball to him. He goes yard. He ties the game, goes to extras. In the 11th inning, a lot has been made of this intentional walk rule that Major League Baseball has just implemented, as far as just you don't need to throw the 4 pitches anymore. It's just an automatic thing. Well, yeah, talking about that controversy, it came directly into play in the 11th inning. A runner on third, 1 out, Seth Beer again at the plate. He's always in the thick of it. They try to intentionally walk him, throw the pitch away, run scores, and after tacking on one more run, Clemson goes on to win that game. And, I'll tell you what, it was a wild series. It was a lot of fun, and, you know, Clemson just found ways to win.
You've seen Seth Beer hit a few home runs this year, in the last 2 years. Where do those rank for you in the Seth Beer legend?
Well, I'll tell you what, because I'm not sure which one he hit further, to be honest, because the one on Saturday, he hit a home run, a 2-run home run in the first inning Saturday against Will Crow. It was a 95-mile-per-hour fastball, and it was out in 2 seconds. It was a bomb. It was just off the bat, the sound of it was just, it sounded like a cannon being launched. But yeah, I mean, I think the home run that he hit yesterday, that he hit on Sunday to tie the game, to me, having seen all the home runs he's hit in person, that ranks up pretty high, maybe number one from what I've seen, just because of the moment, just the disbelief of it. You know, I'm thinking, you know, I even tweeted, you know, of course Seth Beer's coming up with 2 outs in the 9th inning here with a chance to tie, and I'm thinking, there's no way he homers here. There's no way. He'll probably walk. You know, he'll probably maybe hit a little single or you know, maybe even get out. I'm not thinking he's hitting a home run. And then, you know, he goes and does it. So, really, I mean, it's pretty spectacular what he's done so far in his young college career. I mean, he keeps defying expectations. And I know every time I tweet anything about Seth Beer, you get White Sox fans all tweeting about, hey, we got a tank so we can draft this guy. And that's always kind of entertaining.
Yeah, it was fun. He was going off, and Luca Baker was doing pretty well in Houston again this year. He hit a stand-up triple off the center field wall yesterday. He homered in the tournament. Those two guys next year, and Joe Davis at University of Houston. I mean, those three first basemen next year, they're gonna hit a lot of home runs. And you know, college first basemen typically do pretty terribly in the draft. But those guys are going to be very interesting to watch and see how pro teams evaluate them in the 2018 draft.
Yeah, no, certainly. It's going to be a fun debate for sure, especially between those two guys, Luken Baker and Seth Beer. I mean, I know, you know, I remember you and I last year, I mean, we were trying to figure out our freshman of the year, and we had a spirited debate between those two guys. I mean, both of them are kind of, you know, freaks of nature in some ways, just the sheer amount of power that they have, and just, you know, just seeing Luken Baker in person. I mean, he's a big kid, he's a big guy, and yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing him this year. I am a little jealous that you got to see all that baseball down there, but I got to see a great series as well with South Carolina Clemson. But as far as the rest of the top 25 goes, you know, Louisville jumps up to number 4. They're undefeated so far this season. Oregon State moves up to number 5. They're 10-1 this year. They've been rolling. Nick Madrigal hit another home run. He's been swinging it really well for them. You know, one of the most talented shortstops, infielders in the country. And then you look at number 11, and this is the biggest jump in our poll. Arizona shoots up to number 11, and I know Arizona is a team that you really like. You know, what have you seen out of the Wildcats this year, and why did we make that move?
Yeah, they went to Frisco this weekend and in another really, really nice tournament, Frisco College Classic, and they go 2-1. They won the first two games to go jump out to a 10-0 start this season before losing to Nebraska yesterday in a 1-0 loss. The first time that offense has been slowed down at all, much less shut out. And that offense had been absolutely scorching hot for the season. But I think that's a big part of why I've been so impressed by them. At the first two weekends, they played Eastern Kentucky and McNeese State, and you know, that the level of competition there is not incredible. McNeese is a pretty good team, but you know, Arizona really took it to those two teams, but that carried over into this weekend then too. And you know, they beat Oklahoma State in Omaha rematch on Saturday night, and they really fought for that win. They come back for a 10-9 walk-off win. And, you know, I've just really been impressed by their offense. There are a lot of new pieces there. Last year, when we saw them in Omaha, it was all about Zach Gibbons and Cody Raymer at the top of that lineup. And if Gibbons and Raymer didn't go, the Wildcats didn't go last year. But, you know, is it because they're seniors? They're gone now. And Arizona is just fine offensively, which is a real testament to some of the younger players stepping up. Got some freshman Nick Campana coming in and just absolutely raking. And you know, up and down that lineup, there have been guys that have been very productive, and I've been very impressed by that. You have a feeling they're going to pitch pretty well. J.C. Colony on Friday nights has been exceptional, and they've got stuff. They've got the pieces throughout the rest of that staff. Cameron Bain at the back of the bullpen. Rio Gomez has been really good for them in a starting role this year. But if the offense is going to go the way it's been going, I think that bodes very well for Arizona this season.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you completely. And I'll tell you what, I love Nick Quintana. I love him. I saw him a lot. I saw him in Jupiter at Area Codes and all of that. And he you know, every time I'd look up, I'd hear Loud Contact and it was him. You know, he really has a great feel for hitting, and, you know, he's transitioned really smoothly to college ball. And, you know, you talk about that offense and, you know, really, you know, one thing that stood out to me is just the steps forward that we're seeing from Jared Oliva, who last year hit 240 last year, but he's a guy who's always had a lot of tools. He had a really nice College World Series, and he's been very good for them so far. Same for J.J. Matijevic, another guy with a lot of tools, a guy who's gotten, you know, pro interest in the past, and, you know, he's someone who's hit the ball really well so far this year. And, you know, you mentioned J.C. Cloney. I mean, the dude just doesn't like allowing earned runs. He just does not like allowing earned runs because he hasn't in, like, 4 years, it feels like. He had 16 scoreless innings in the College World Series, and then he has yet to allow an earned run so far this year. He's given up a few unearned runs, because no one's perfect, but, Yeah, I mean it's been interesting to see what they've done so far this year with how much that they've lost and how many pieces they've had to replace and really, you know, piece together. You know, it's a testament to the coaching job that Jay Johnson has done since taking over there from Nevada. I mean, obviously last year, you know, few expected them to go to Omaha and go as far as they did, and you know, they're so far this year they're really just picking up where they left off.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, that recruiting class led by Quintana, I believe it was the number 10 in the country. It was definitely top 10 class. And, you know, they've filled the holes really well. It was kind of JUCO heavy because they knew they needed to fill the holes. Mm-hmm. But those guys, I mean, it's still not easy to step in. And, you know, it seems like there's still good team cohesion there. That was a big part of them last year was how good their chemistry was. And, you know, they seemingly found a way to maintain that despite all the newcomers.
Right. Now let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about the ACC a little bit. What is going on in the ACC right now? Looking at this past weekend, obviously Clemson, a great weekend for Clemson. You know, Virginia continued to play well, though they haven't played, you know, premium competition yet. We've got ACC play starting this upcoming weekend. You know, North Carolina this weekend lost 2-3 to Long Beach State. They lost to St. John's, who entered our top 25 at number 22 midweek. And then NC State is scuffling a little bit, lost 3 straight, lost in midweek to Charlotte, lost to Maryland, lost to Rhode Island. What do you make of the ACC picture right now? It seems like it's gotten a little cloudier since the season started.
Well, and you didn't even mention because they're not ranked, but Miami now has lost back-to-back series. They lost at Florida, swept at Florida last weekend. You know, okay, understandable. But then they turn around, go home this weekend, and lose 2 out of 3 to Dartmouth, which was the Big Green. They did a big statement down there in Coral Gables. But yeah, I mean, the ACC this weekend was some of those teams hit a little bit of a stumble, and I mean, this is sort of just what happened. But it's also, you know, as we get into, since they're starting ACC play already this week, you know, there are going to be some teams that really need to make sure they get off on the right foot here. Mm-hmm. And Virginia goes to play Carolina this weekend, and UNC coming off that series loss to Long Beach. You know, it's a big weekend for them to kind of prove, that this young team is, as good as what their talent seems to be. Mm-hmm. And for Virginia, it's by far their biggest test of the season. They have not played a very tough schedule to this point, and you know they haven't played a team like North Carolina at all. So you know it's going to be a big weekend for both of those teams. You know, as for NC State, they're still trying to sort out the pitching staff. They got Brian Brown back this week. We'll see how they use him going forward now that he's healthy. But that was not a good showing in the Irish Classic there. So yeah, there's some ACC teams that need to figure some things out here in a hurry. Mm-hmm. And, we're going to find out a lot more about some of these ACC teams because, you know, like Louisville, we have a number 4. They're the ACC favorite or behind Florida State. And, you know, Louisville is another team that, you know, they played in a decent tournament that opening weekend. But since then they went home and haven't played much the last couple weekends. So, and you know, Florida State never leaves home, for weekend series before ACC play starts. So, you know, these ACC teams we're really going to find out more in the weeks to come, but this weekend was, maybe it was a little bit of a wake up call for some of these teams.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you mentioned the Virginia Carolina series, and that's certainly a series that I've circled on my calendar because it's going to be interesting to me. For Virginia so far this year has really swung the bats well. I mean, you look up and pretty much every game they're scoring double-digit runs. They've hit for a lot of power. Paven Smith has been great this year. Adam Hazley has 5 home runs already. He had 6 all of last year, and he's done a great job on the mound as well. I'm curious to see how their offense stacks up against the, you know, the power arms at North Carolina. J.B. Bukauskas on Friday obviously is the big name there, but they've got a lot of power arms on that staff. I'm curious to see how they match up. I'm also curious to see how Virginia pitching-wise, you know, like you mentioned, I mean, they haven't faced a lot of tough competitions so far. I'm curious to see how, you know, Evan Sperling, for instance, you know, a guy who didn't pitch last year because of Tommy John surgery, he's pitched well so far this year. He has great stuff. How does he do against an ACC offense? Same for Daniel Lynch, a guy who's pitched better this year, who seems to have taken a step forward this year. But again, we haven't seen him against, you know, an ACC offense. So I'm curious to see that. I'm also interested, you know, in NC State. You mentioned, you know, Brian Brown coming back. That's big for them because really, you know, from a pitching standpoint, you know, I'm not sure what they're running out there starting wise. I mean, it's a lot of mixing and matching, and that's, you know, that's something that, you know, NC State has done a lot over the years. But I'm really not sure, you know, from a pitching standpoint, how they're going to piece it together going forward this year. That's something that I think is worth watching. I mean, I think offensively, you know, they've been swinging well for the most part. They have a lot of pieces in that lineup, a lot of talent there. But, you know, who are they going to start behind Brian Brown? How are they going to use Brian Brown? You know, those are the questions to me for North Carolina State.
Yeah, and, you know, I also want to mention Notre Dame, which started the season 1-8. They did get a couple wins there in the final days of the Irish Classic, but, you know, there's some ACC teams really scuffling, too.
Right.
You know, Miami is, their record's a little better than 1-8, but that team looks a little banged up now. They're without freshman catcher Michael Anfitis, who had been really good to start the year, replacing Zach Collins. They really needed that guy. He's a very highly touted freshman, but you know, he broke his leg in the midweek, and you know, so there's some teams in the ACC that are scuffling, and you know, with conference play starting this weekend for them, I'm going to be very interested to see how things shake out there.
Same for me. And shifting gears entirely, looking out at the West Coast, you know, the Pac-12 last year was, it was a strange year for the Pac-12. You know, some of the traditional powers really struggled. There's a lot of turnover. You know, Utah ended up winning the league despite having a losing overall record. That surprised a lot of people. Looking at the conference this year, we have Oregon State at number 5. We've already talked at length about Arizona at 11. You know, Washington, another winning weekend. Stanford, you know, a really nice showing against Texas. They've moved up to number 16 in our poll. You know, it seems like, you know, the Pac-12, at least at the top, you know, thus far, it's, you know, would you say it's been a better year, or it seems like a better year than the conference had a year ago? Or what's sort of your read of the Pac-12 right now?
I mean, to this point, it looks like that. I mean,
yeah.
You know, Oregon State has played really well out of the gate. Arizona, you know, again, really, really well out of the gate. Washington has, you know, they're still figuring it out a little bit, I think. But you know, as a northern team, they played at home this weekend. But it, you know, some of the weather up the northwest was tough this week. You know, you saw Mississippi State playing at Oregon, getting off the bus in Eugene there in snow flurries. So, you know, and Oregon State got rained out on Friday night. So, you know, those teams, they went home this weekend because it was time, but the weather up there is still dicey. So, you know, for those teams in the northern part of that conference, it's always a little more difficult to start the season than some of the more southern teams. But, you know, Stanford, I just want to throw this out there. Stanford's pitching staff this year is without Tristan Beck to this point, their ace, and so far in 3 weekends against some pretty good competition, they played Fullerton, they played Texas. They have a 2.06 team ERA. Mm-hmm. After nine, and opponents are hitting 172 against them. Mm-hmm. I think Stanford could pitch a little bit this year.
It seems like it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you have to give them a lot of credit because, I mean, they had to do, it was a similar situation for them last year when they didn't have Quantrill. I mean, here they are again, you know, losing the guy that they're supposed to depend on, the guy that they're expecting to be their Friday starter. They don't have him, and yet they're still, you know, finding a way to get it done on the mound. I mean, it's certainly impressive, you know, especially, you know, obviously the last year with Mark was there. You know, they're finding a way to win. We'll see if they can continue, and we'll see, you know, Tristan Beck's health. I know they're hoping to get him back later in the year. Obviously that would be a big boost. That's like a huge trade at the trade deadline in the big leagues, you know, to get him back. So they're certainly an interesting team to watch, but they've played really well so far, obviously. And, you know, their jump up the rankings has been indicative of that.
Yeah. And, I mean, I mentioned the northern teams, you know, trying to affect this weather a little bit, but some of the southern teams, it's been a little shaky out of the gate. You know, Arizona State lost a week series for Loyola Marymount this weekend, following a series loss at TCU. And then, in the Dodger Stadium Classic, USC got a really big win on Sunday, coming back to beat UCLA. And I think that was a win that the Trojans really needed, but the Bruins could have used that one too. That would have given them a 2-1 weekend, after they beat Michigan on Friday night. That would have been potentially a nice momentum boost for them to beat their arch rivals there in Dodger Stadium, but USC able to come back and get what could be a nice momentum win for them.
Right. Certainly, yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see how things go forward with that, with the Pac-12. They haven't started conference play yet. That'll be coming up shortly. Moving around to the rest of the top 25, we had two teams drop out this week. We had Vanderbilt, who was number 14. They drop out after dropping their second straight series. They dropped a series to Illinois-Chicago, and then this past weekend they dropped one to Cal State Northridge. Kind of a surprise. I mean, not even kind of a surprise. It's a surprise, to see that happen to the Commodores so far. And then, UC Santa Barbara, Cal State Fullerton and Long Beach State held their own this weekend in the Big West. UC Santa Barbara was swept by Kentucky and nearly had a perfecto thrown against them by Justin Lewis until Austin Bush hit a home run in the eighth inning against him. But they've been scuffling a little bit lately. What do you make of those two teams dropping them out? I mean, do you see this being a long-term thing? Do you see them getting back on track?
Well, except for your boy Austin Butch, that's a Mike Lanana fave.
He is, for sure.
UCSB has they've been really struggling offensively, and that's a team that's going to rely more on its pitching than its offense to begin with. But after 11 games, they're only averaging 3.7 runs per game. They're hitting .213 as a team. That's not going to get it done. They're going to have to find a way to do a little more offensively. And that trip to Kentucky is a really tough one for them. Obviously, you're coming all the way east and playing a pretty good SEC team. And they lost those first two games. They're just one-run games before Sunday kind of got away from them. And they'll bounce back. I feel pretty good about the Couchos bouncing back, but I don't know. I don't know exactly what the answers are going to look like. They're really going to have to get that offense going. The pitching, okay. I know they can pitch better than they've pitched, but their pitching has really been okay to this point. It's a matter of they need to find a way to score some more runs. Vanderbilt is their mystery to me at this point. They've lost all three starts by Kyle Wright, your first team All-American on Friday night. They have yet to win a game that he started, and the last two series losses are, USC went out this weekend. They played Missouri, another SEC team, and got swept. Cal State Northridge, before going to Vanderbilt, lost 3 of 4 at home to Towson. So these are not, the teams they're losing to, it's not like they're, the most talented best teams in the country going in there to Nashville and winning. It's teams that Vanderbilt really needs to be beating at home. And so I don't know what their answers are going to look like either. There's a lot of talent on the team, like I talked about last week. But, they've got some young players there taking on larger roles. And, they've got to find something to get themselves going because, they start SEC play in 2 weeks at Mississippi, and that's not going to be an easy one for them at all. So they've really got to get going here quickly.
They do, and yeah, I mean it's puzzling to me too to see the way that they've struggled so far. And I mean, looking at these past 2 weekends in particular, I mean it's not like they've been blown out. I mean, they've had opportunities to win both series and could have won. You look at the series against UIC. Both their losses came in extra innings, both close games. And then you look at this past weekend, the Friday game, the Kyle Wright start, they left 12 men on base offensively, a game that, they had their opportunities. It just seems like, at this point, maybe it's, you know, you talk about the youth a little bit and, you know, guys trying to figure out their roles a little bit, you know, maybe they just haven't figured out, okay, how to win. You know, they haven't figured out how to get that run across in key moments and how to finish off a game. I mean, that seems to be the problem that they've had so far, because, I mean, you look at their roster and you expect them to win. You know, like you said, a first team All-American in Kyle Wright on Friday nights. You have Jaron Kendall, you know, arguably, you know, the top position player prospect, certainly, you know, up there, you know, in the college ranks, and, you know, really just up and down that roster. I mean, they're Vanderbilt, you know, they're always going to have talent. So it's been odd to see so far. You know, you expect them to put it together at some point, especially given, you know, the coaching staff and what they've achieved over the last few years. But it's really, really head scratching and puzzling. And, you know, they face St. Mary's next weekend, which isn't an easy matchup. You know, it's
a regional team from last year.
Yeah, so it's not a, you know, it's not a gimme by any means. So it's going to be interesting to see how they fare against them. I mean, they really do need to try to right the ship before they get in the SEC play, because, right, I mean, Ole Miss is not going to be easy, and then right after that they have Texas A&M. So two top 25 teams looming on the schedule, so they need to get it together quickly.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not going to get any easier from there either. So, you know, they, it's a team that I think we feel like can figure it out, but after two series losses like that, you know, there's got to be some concern there going forward in the long term, not just in the short term, but I think in the long term, because, you know, it's early to talk about RPI and NCAA tournament implications, but those four losses that they took in the last 2 weeks are not going to help them one bit. So, you know, it's something they really need to figure out before it gets any worse.
Right. Right. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. And, you know, the other significant change in our top 25, we bring in St. John's, as I alluded to earlier. And, you know, they're a team that's been really rolling so far this year. They're 10-1. They had that midweek win against North Carolina. Their first loss came to East Carolina this past weekend in the Keith LeClair Classic. Obviously, East Carolina, tough team, a top 10 team. But otherwise, they beat Coastal at Coastal on the first weekend of the season. You know, they've done a lot of nice things so far this year. You know, well-deserved, you know, getting in the top 25. I know our colleague Hudson Belinsky. I know he's all over the Red Storm. What do you think of St. John's, and do you think this is sustainable? Do you think they're for real?
You know, I saw them on opening day against Western Carolina, and going into that game, you know, I knew that what St. John's does really well is the hit. They've got a very experienced lineup, and that's exactly what they did that day at Myrtle Beach. They just came out of there. They're absolutely relentless offensively, and I think that is definitely going to maintain throughout the season. It's a very, very old lineup. A lot of seniors. I wrote about Troy Dixon, their catcher, their senior catcher, their cleanup there. Him, Michael Donadio, last year's Big East freshman of the year, Josh Shaw. So like, they're going to keep scoring runs. Their pitching staff is a little bit younger, and, you know, eventually they're going to run into some weekend where they don't pitch as well. And I'm going to be interested to see whether their offense can pick them up or whether, and just how they respond to that kind of adversity. But there's a lot of talent there. This start has been incredible. It's the best start since like 1981. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they're, I think it is in many respects sustainable. They're traditionally one of the best programs in the Big East. And, you know, them and Xavier at the top of that conference this year, that's going to be a very entertaining, battle, you know, throughout the spring. They're still several weeks away from conference play. The Big East does not play many conference games, but, you know, St. John's has done this all on the road. I mean, it's been a lot of neutral site games, but, you know, that's a team that they haven't played a home game yet. They're going to play a home game for another week or so. And, you know, so it's a very nice start for the Red Storm. And, you know, that's why they're in the top 25 now for the first time since 2012.
Right, right. And yeah, and, you know, they'll continue on the road next weekend at Liberty. That's St. John's next matchup. And Liberty, of course, you know, under first-year head coach Scott Jackson, the former assistant at North Carolina, will be an interesting matchup next weekend for St. John's at Liberty. I mean, so we've pretty much gone up and down the top 25, I think, at this point. We've touched on most of the conferences here. Is there anything else to you, Teddy, that really stood out this weekend or anything that you're particularly looking forward to, you know, this week in college baseball?
I do want to give a couple shout-outs here to Danny Herbeck and Parker Wigler, who both throw no-hitters this weekend. Mm-hmm. Herbeck making his third career start for Radford. I think he threw 9 total innings. He's a senior, and he's thrown 9 total innings in his career before no-hitting Quinnipiac on Saturday. And then Wrigler, Kansas State, threw his no-hitter the next day against Eastern Illinois. And then later that day, Washington State threw a combined no-hitter against Stephen F. Austin. So we've already had 6 no-hitters this season in the country, which is remarkable considering that we're 3 weeks into the year. So congrats to those guys. And I don't know if I don't know how many more no-hitters we're going to get this season, but so far there have been quite a few.
Yeah, no, there have been. And speaking of that, you know, I wanted to give, you know, along those lines, I wanted to give a shout out to Justin Dillon at Sacramento State, their Friday starter. He had a one hit, scoreless start against Washington this past weekend, to deal them a loss in that game. And then, you know, looking back at the rest of his season, he no hit Northern Kentucky in the start before that, had 13 strikeouts. And then he started the year just giving up one hit to Washington State. In 22 innings, he's given up just 2 hits this year, which, as they say, is pretty good. So shout out to him. It's been very Jared Poche-like for him out on the West Coast. I think he's probably the West Coast answer to Jared Poche right now in terms of stats and his performance. So I wanted to give a shout out to him.
Yeah, Jared Poche gave up 3 hits on Saturday. He's up to 4 this season.
Yeah, he's slipping. He's slipping, I'll tell you what. yeah, I had some LSU fans not very happy with me a couple weeks ago because noted that Poche's no-hitter was 7 innings. I do not apologize for that because that is the fact. But Jared Poche has been outstanding so far this year. Obviously, we're just joking that he's about him slipping. You know, 3 hits is obviously an excellent start, especially, you know, against that offense. So yeah, he's been great, and you know, it's certainly LSU has an outstanding 1-2 punch with Lang and Jared Poche in that rotation.
Yeah, no doubt. And you should be able to read more about Jared Poche on baseballamerica.com later this week and in the next issue of Mag.
Right. Yeah, and I'll have a story on South Carolina right-hander Will Crow in the coming days and weeks. He looked outstanding this past weekend, even though it came in a losing effort. You know, he's touching 96, 97. He's working consistently 93, 94, 4 pitches. His changeup looked good. He got a lot of ugly swings and misses on it. Throwing the curveball for strikes, commanding it well. A little bit of a harder slider that he's throwing for strikes as well. Really, he looked like a first rounder on Saturday, and he very well could be. He has the stuff, he has the pedigree, and he's a cool story too, because he's a guy who, you know, his sophomore year in April, you know, he tore his UCL, ended up with Tommy John surgery. Terrible timing for someone, you know, heading into his junior year. He missed his, you know, entire junior year, his draft year, decided to come back to school though, and he's been phenomenal so far for South Carolina. And even though they lost the series this weekend, their future is bright just because of the pitching that they have on their staff. I mean, they're loaded. They have arms for days on that staff.
Absolutely. I mean, we've talked about this before, but I mean, that trio of Schmidt, Will Crow, and Adam Hill is up there. It's one of the best in the country, no doubt.
Right. Well, Teddy, I know you have a flight to catch soon. You're still in Houston right now. We miss you here at the Baseball America office in Durham. We'll have content for you guys all week this week. Stay tuned for it on baseballamerica.com. Follow us both on Twitter, Teddy Cahill at Ted Cahill, Mike Lanana at M Lanana, LANANNA. As always, we appreciate you listening to our college podcast. It's always a lot of fun. For Teddy, I'm Mike Lanana, and talk to you guys next week.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.